This is The View from Tab. I'm Jim Menick.
I'm John Cruz.
And I'm Chris Palmer.
And those of you waiting to hear the name, Mike Beetz, we'll have to wait a little while longer because he's on his way, so he will join us.
To be fair, there usually is a significant pause before he says his name. So.
But it's not like half an hour.
You
never know.
He's been working out in off-season, right?
Yeah. So anyhow, we're going to talk about various things, and we were just talking a little bit about the Big Bronx, which just took place. But I want to talk about something else first, which I didn't even mention, which is last year at this time, we were talking heavily about case disclosure, which was an issue last year at Greenhill. And after we had this big discussion about case disclosure, I have to admit, I don't think I ever heard the words again for the rest of the year. And so my question to the two of you, because you both went to Greenhill, and John, you just ran the Bronx tournament.
Sure.
What is the situation with case disclosure in the world at large these days?
Well, that's a good question. I'm going to be just completely blunt and say that I forgot to put my page back up about case disclosure when we switched from Joy of Tournaments to Tab Room, and that's because Joy of Tournaments doesn't archive your tournament for you. Another nice feature of Tab Room, which I think... just to be honest. And so I just really forgot about it until about 2.5 weeks into the registration.
Yeah.
And not that I forgot about case disclosure, but that I forgot to put up a policy about it. And I felt at that point that people had already purchased plane tickets and that it wasn't fair for me to suddenly hoist a policy onto the tournament that wasn't on the invitation at the time where they purchased plane tickets.
Did anybody say anything to you about this?
A lot of people asked about it on both.
Were people asking because they expected it?
But, well, both ways. Some people asked because they expected it. Some people asked because they weren't sure. Some people asked and said, does that mean you threw in the towel? Other people who asked because they thought I was, walking away from a good fight. I mean, stuff.
Okay, so essentially it's a bureaucratic issue, and you really actually never made a decision not to do it except for the fact that you didn't.
Felt that if my whole issue was that I believe, as I do, that case disclosure is an issue of fairness, I feel that it's even more unfair to change tournament policy or to add tournament policies after people have already committed to be at the tournament.
Which means that now, so then Greenhill did then have their case disclosure issue. All right, Greenhill had it last year. Greenhill had it this year. You had it last year, but we had some issues, if I remember correctly, with the wireless or something like that.
Yes, there were some, there were reported issues about the wireless. There didn't seem to be as many issues this year when it was the same wireless system, but... No.
There, John, there was a serious problem with your wireless. I couldn't get Sporkle. We've had this discussion.
Okay. I could, so I don't know what's wrong with
you. Yeah, I know. We've had that discussion.
I only know one thing that happened about case disclosure in my tournament that was very distressing, and I didn't want to make a big deal about it at the time because I felt like everyone was in such a good mood at the tournament, and I think the tournament went well, and everything was going so well, and I didn't want to be Debbie Downer. But something that I think is interesting is that somebody at our tournament reported the NDCA case wiki as a pornographic website to the Department of Education in the city, which put an immediate block on the site and made it impossible to access from our Wi-Fi network for the weekend. I don't think that was a coincidence, and I think that is pathetic. And I think whoever did that should be ashamed of themselves because I think that is I think it's.
That's just
very, very, very infantile.
Huh. Well, now I kind of feel bad because I didn't know that, but I was using a different method of proxying out, so I was able to get to it.
And other people went on their iPhones and whatnot who want to do it. So it wasn't like,
but the whole point of disclosure is a level playing field, and so I don't know. I kind of feel bad for having used it not knowing that.
Well, it is of interest to me that such a thing happened.
Now, what's funny about that too is that. It was a relative non-issue at Greenhill. I don't remember a single conversation about it. Just, people put their stuff up and moved on with life.
I didn't follow necessarily progress in the community at the various tournaments that we went to where there was a lot of talk at all last year about case disclosure. But, of course, I don't go to a lot of circuit tournaments. So maybe just because I wasn't at circuit tournaments, I was missing this... And it was going on. Was that the case? I mean, was it going on at Emory or Glenbrook?
Greenhill and Bronx Science were the only two tournaments that I know of that required. I think maybe Meadows did too.
What about TOC? TOC didn't.
No, it did not require it.
Yeah. I think all the discussion. I mean, we don't have to discuss the good or the bad about the whole thing. I mean, more germane is why hasn't it either caught on or people like actively made it go away. It just seems to be where it was a year ago. We haven't gotten any further with it. All the arguments remain the same, and it hasn't been instituted and it hasn't been deinstituted. It's just this thing that hovers in a couple of tournaments.
Well, it's not as controversial as it used to be, certainly, I think, anyway. At least it's not on people's active radar because I don't hear as much about it.
But that may just be because nobody's doing it, except at a couple of tournaments.
I mean, we're doing it.
At Lex?
On our team.
Oh, yeah, but you're not... okay, so a team may or may not be doing it as a matter of habit.
Yeah.
And practice. And I know teams do. I know Beach does it, right? I mean, you know, they're using it. Yeah. I was just curious. And it seemed to be such a hot subject.
Well, I think it's because of the manner it was in which it was introduced. It kind of caught people a little flat-footed and by surprise. But now people have had a couple of years to digest it, and they sort of understand it's part of the Green Hill Tournament. I don't know. It just doesn't...
But it looks like it's going to be part of some tournaments and not part of others. And if you want to do it, everybody will be fine. And if you don't want to do it, everybody will be fine. And that's about the end of it.
Well... And what's also interesting, and I will be unfortunately unable to make this point without bragging in some implicit manner, but look at Noah, right? Noah won Green Hill, and then had all his stuff on the wiki, never took any of it down. We did not prepare a great deal of new material. We didn't really change too much about his material, and then he turned around and won Bronx.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So... You know, disclosure really screwed him because, you know, if anyone were going to be the subject of a massive prep out and if anyone were going to be the one.
Well, this is like Andrew and Zach in policy.
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing.
It was going to be Noah, you know, the very first debater anyone who's not stupid should have been preparing for was Noah's case positions. And yet he won another tournament on the very same topic a month later. Plenty of time to prepare everything for.
I agree.
With a lot of the same people there too.
Andrew and Zach would post right exactly. Andrew and Zach would post the entirety of their cases word for word, and would still, and they had according to the page count reader had by far the most read page on the wiki.
Yep.
And we're still winning, and I'm not saying that to show off. I'm saying that because it shows that the wiki is not going to give you, you know, it's not going to define your career.
It doesn't make a good debater bad, and it doesn't make a bad debater good. It just helps you.
I mean, well, the case is only so much of a debate, and part of it is how you handle it and how you debate. I mean, you know, some rounds the case hardly matters at all, which is not good and not right, but nonetheless true, and it's more just how the argumentation sort of plays out. So, yeah, maybe that. I mean, a question I would ask, I mean, is Noah, I didn't see Noah's debate. I mean, are his positions relatively straightforward, not way off the mark, in which case... You know, having them publish, you know, they would by default be strong positions because they're positions that one would take and naturally, and you wouldn't change them, and they remain strong, and if you debate them well, you're going to win, you know, and he's obviously an excellent debater, and so he debates them excellently, and he wins, and knowing that he's going to go in with an argument that everybody knows what the argument is because 100 other people are doing it too, but he's doing it better.
Right, exactly.
Is what it boils down to. So the whole disclosure thing, I mean, the disclosure thing, in, to some extent, just seems to be aimed at people who are like, running a lot of different cases, maybe, or that whole thing about the one person versus the many. But I had one person. I mean, I had Sophie last year. She was one person versus the many. And I don't know how disclosure played out for her, but it didn't seem to hurt her one way or the other.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah.
And, you know, Noah ran one AF the entire time of the topic. And that AF was on the wiki from round one of Green Hill onwards. And, you know, he kept winning on that AF. There you are. So, I don't know. I find that as evidence accumulates, the big dealness of disclosure is harder and harder to support.
I mean, the big dealness, and there doesn't seem to be any groundswell for or against anymore. It's just one of those things. As we just said, I mean, it'll be somewhere, sometimes. And because some people like it. I mean, you get to run your tournament the way you like to run it.
Beats is online if you want to add him.
Is he?
Yep.
I don't see him.
I see him.
I don't see him.
Hold
Okay, now let's. Oh, I'm looking in the wrong program. Here we go. No,
well,
I mean,
that was awkward.
No, here we go. No, he's not in this program either. But let me see if I can bring him on here. No, he's not.
Yes, he is.
No, he's right. Where? I mean, I see. You see, the way this works, boys and girls at home, is they're okay. Green, and he's not green.
He's green on mine. Maybe he blocked you.
Green on mine too. Can you hardly blame him?
Okay, let me see if I can. I'm going to click on Beats. There we go. And I'm adding him. He's still not green. It's not easy being green. Okay, now Palmer isn't green.
Well, I'm here, so you know that's not right.
I'm going to put you in here, and let's see what happens with this. No. Okay, he came online. He is now green.
You just tried to add my work account.
But I hear you.
Hey, Beats.
Do you hear me?
Yes.
Yep. Okay, now wait a second. I think I have two calls. Oh, good. That one went away. So we have four. Holy crap.
What'd you do?
I got rid of everyone else. This is great. This is like live nonsense, and I'm recording this. This is just like the tab room. Okay, nothing's going right.
Tab room's very smooth.
Here we go. So I just... Whoa. Okay, let me try that one more time. I'm going to actually pause the other thing here. Oh, it's not... Oh, shoot. Okay, that's actually good. So it's not recording. So let me see if I can get everybody back. Jeez Louise. Start conference call. John Cruz. Mike Beats. Palmer Tab. Start. Nothing. I'm going to restart Skype. I'll be back in a minute.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, recording is back on. I'm going to have to...
Like that didn't happen.
The last thing I heard was, now wait a second, I think I... And then the world went dead. So I could have seen that one coming on.
I did the old help desk trick. I turned it on and turned it off, but not in that order. And seemed to work fine. So God only knows. Mike, you there?
I am here.
See? I will now say to our vast audience of one, hello...
Hi,
nice
Abdul.
Save again.
Hey, Chad
and Baruti. we now have Mr. Beats is here. So we've just, as a matter of fact, we were just at the end of a discussion about case disclosure, which you don't care about. So we're going to move right along. But what we did, essentially, to sum up, we just said case disclosure being such a big issue, haven't heard much about it lately. So, anyhow.
I think we were tired of talking about it.
I think, yeah, and nobody really did any. The tournaments didn't take it up, you know, as a general rule, so... There.
We still put all of our stuff up.
And that's what we were saying, essentially. So anyhow, we'll move on to the next subject, which I guess is John's tournament. John Cruz had a tournament this last weekend in Bronx. It was in the Bronx, right?
Yes, it was.
Thank you. Okay.
Were there people there?
It was small this year for a change. Couldn't get people to come because it's hard to get to the New York. There aren't any airports and things like that. So... let's see.
It's one of the few times all year that all four of us were in the same tournament.
That's right. That's right. Anyhow, obviously, everybody knows that this was a great tournament, and it's sort of boring that it was a great tournament, so let's talk about all the problems that we had.
No.
here's the thing, and I'll say this, and then I'm done, which is I know there's a lot of tournaments out there that are big tournaments. They tend to be colleges, and they tend to be run by combines of a lot of people. And this one is pretty much just run by John. I think it's a great accomplishment. You do good work. You should be proud of yourself. But then again, you are. So,
I am proud of the hard work of my kids. And my
I was saying this before we went online. One of the things that makes a tournament work, and we've talked about this in the past, one of the things that makes a tournament work is the machinery of the kids running ballots and all that kind of stuff. And your machine worked flawlessly, at least as far as the LD was concerned. I mean, ballots were being gotten out of the hot little hands of the judges exactly when they were supposed to. I mean, we were never, you know... sitting there complaining, these damn runners are not, you know, everything was coming as much as could be expected, because you do have a big physical area that has to be run across, and there's no way of getting around the fact that there are going to be rounds, you know, off in God's country somewhere. But Chris, you were over, so we had speech for the I like to say we as if I had anything to do with it. We had speech for the first time. So how is the first day of speech was over at Fordham.
Yep.
Which is, how far away is that from? That's not far.
Oh, not far. It was about a 10-minute drive or so when I made it.
Right.
Yeah.
It really wasn't far, and it was a beautiful building, really nice spot. The hosts over at Fornub did an excellent job. The food was unlike anything I'd seen at a tournament before. It was just a marvel. It was food that you would eat when you were home. You know, it was just like, wow, this is legitimately good. The Fordham prep students who ran our ballot table also did a fantastic job, and we were telling them they were better than any Yaleys we'd ever worked with. not that that's a high bar to jump over, but you know, and it's something to tell them. It was just one of those days where everything went smoothly, and there's a value to a tournament like that in speech in particular, because speech programs tend to be much larger than debate programs. You know, it's a debate program will bring 6 people to a tournament like Bronx, whereas a speech program will bring 26 people.
Right.
But one of the nice things about a tournament like we ran this year is that each school had a relatively small entry. And so the judging tended to be both very solid but also very reliable. When you're a big speech program and you bring a large crew to a tournament, you tend to have to dig down your bench of parent judges pretty far, and that usually means those are the people who are going to be screwing your tournament up. But what was really nice about this pool is most of the judges were either experienced parents, experienced college students, or head coaches. And so there was a definite sense that if we put out a ballot, it was going to be picked up. If we asked somebody to do something, it would be done. And that there were fewer questions of a procedural nature we had to answer. And in speech, unlike debate, your judging pool changes a lot from week to week. You don't have the same crew of people on a preference sheet that you sort of know and get to
understand. But we did have a strike sheet.
We did have a strike sheet.
And what was the response to the strikes when all was said?
Only about 7 or 8 schools used it, but those 7 or 8 schools were very appreciative to have it.
I was just about to say that. They were definitely very appreciative based on the emails that it's getting.
Yep. So most people didn't avail themselves of it, but the people who did very much appreciated it.
Now, strikes
and the people who didn't avail themselves of it, more importantly, didn't complain about it.
I think that's as important. We had strikes in PF too, right?
Yep.
Yes.
And what was the reaction to that?
That was hilarious, actually, because the same 6 schools all struck each other, and then no one else used them.
And that's
This would have been my guess, having done it down at TOC. There are some schools that don't want anything to do with each other, and everybody else just muddles through, which is fine. Then use it, and then you'll be happy, and the people who aren't using it aren't unhappy. You know, it's like the MJP, and we talk a lot. PJ Wexler, whenever I write about it, is always commenting on it, and he's a smart guy, and all his comments are actually true. But if you don't, your kids aren't going to get terribly hurt if you don't do it. I mean, there are some things that, his main argument is that MJP is directing where the pool of judges is going, and I don't know if that's true or not. I think they'll go there anyhow. He just sort of thinks it's pushing it along a little bit, and he may be right about that, but I think it's going there anyhow. But if you don't do the MJP, you're still getting pretty good judges. Not hurting terribly.
In IE too, especially, there was such a surprisingly small number of strikes compared to the size of the judging pool. We had 3 or 4 strikes, and we had about 90 some odd judges all weekend. So really what it was for is, it so happens that every once in a while you get a really bad experience with a certain judge who just sees things very different, or you find them harsh, or you find their ballots very unhelpful, and you would just prefer not to have to perform in front of that person again. And to my mind, having 3 or 5 strikes in a large IE field like that is enough to make it so at least that kid doesn't have to get up there and do their performance and feel right from the bat that they are going to lose and nothing they can do can impress that judge based on past experience. It doesn't have the ability to shape a judging pool or to reform what kinds of judges you have in the way that MJP potentially does. Yeah. It's just a way to avoid something that's uncomfortable.
Which is at the basic point of strikes, is to get out these people that hate your guts for whatever reason and not have to worry. I have a question now for Mike and for Chris. Now, you both had kids at Mike obviously didn't have kids at Yale, but Chris, you had kids at Yale, and Mike, you both had kids here. Now at Yale, we had about a 30% A plus, whatever, 30% ones, and here it was 20% ones. So my question is, where is the right, I mean, and roughly the same, I mean, not exactly the same number of judges, but certainly a lot of judges, okay, in a big field. So which is the better, where should we be with this? I mean, I was sort of pushing for the larger number only because it made my life easier, which is no reason to do it. But the larger number means, you know, you got way more A pluses when you're doing the tabbing. But the real issue is was the 30 too much? Is the 20 okay? Are you comfortable with the 20% at a tournament like this?
I kind of prefer just even numbers across the board of all the five categories, all the six categories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the reason why is that when you ask for more ones, you're not really getting mutuality. So to my mind, having fewer ones on my sheet and then knowing that I'm going to get more 2-2 and 3-3 debates
mm-hmm.
is fine, because if you go, let's say you go overboard and ask for 40% ones or something,
mm-hmm.
Then I'm going to get a lot of 1-2 debates that are hidden within the ones, you know, because not all ones are created
right.
equal. And if my 40th one is the judge in front, and my opponent, it happens to be their first one, then that's not a good mutual debate for me. So I'd much rather have given that judge a 2 and then have the tab room not be able to come out and say, well, everybody got 1-1s, mm-hmm. when really that's not true. It's not a
so
true one judge.
When the field gets bigger then, I mean, and when the number of 1s gets bigger, they're just not 1s anymore, in other words.
Yeah, when you start mm-hmm. jacking up the 1 requirement, then the definition of 1 becomes so diluted that it's not really true mutuality.
Yeah.
And that happened last year at Harvard because the judging pool was so big that essentially all the circuit judges got rated 1 by everybody.
Yeah.
And it happened to some degree at Glenbrook's too, a little bit. It just felt like I was rating more people 1 than I really wanted to.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll be doing this as smaller tournaments too. I don't see any reason not to. So like a bump where I'm going to have maybe 35 or 40 judges. There's no way you're getting mutuality necessarily all the time. That's my only complaint, but maybe you do. I don't know. We haven't really tested it that much on the smaller tournaments, and we did it at NDCA, which was small. And we ended up with a lot of 1-2-2-1, you know, trying to balance that over the period.
What were the ratios at NDCA?
I forget what the ratios were, but the pool, I mean, basically, the pool was so small, it almost doesn't matter. I mean, Mike, what was your feeling about the 20% across the board?
I guess in an ideal world, I think we would have a more granular preference system. Like in policy debate, they're able to do a 5 instead of 3, or 6 instead of 4, essentially. Because we do like 1, 2, 3, 4, and then 5s are whatever and 6s are strikes. In policy debate, they're able to go.
I've heard bad things. I mean, it's 9 in the system.
Go to 9. Yeah.
But I've heard bad things that it doesn't work necessarily.
Well, it
that
doesn't
well.
Work in TRPC.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the drawback.
It doesn't work in TRPC in double flighted events.
Right.
So that's why policy can use it and we can't. So.
Right. Which is too bad, because I agree with Chris that we probably want to try to have real ratings. I mean, then when it's more granular like that too, people will just have to be more accepting that you're going to get more 2-2 pairings because there isn't going to be as much overlap with ones. But it really doesn't, you know, it doesn't seem like it was that, it didn't seem like it was onerous at this tournament for the most part. I mean, even teams that were able to, you know, try to game it in their favor, we were able to find 3-3 judges for those instances, and it, you know, I didn't actually get any complaints about it. So
nobody said anything. I mean, in terms of the mutuality, probably felt right on the other end they were getting.
I think the thing that people like tournament directors have to do is take just an honest look at their judging pool and be honest about, you know, who they've brought in, who they've hired, who's coming to judge, and start use that as the starting point for the numbers.
That makes sense, actually. I mean, I look at like my judging pool at Bump. I mean, what is an A judge? I mean, an A judge at Bump is not an A judge at the Bronx. I mean, there's you have a national draw, you have, you know, national level judges and stuff, and I'll have a couple of people like that, but essentially I have a much more parochial field. And what is an A in that field is different. So you're right. You should look at your field as your starting point for setting, thinking well, that even makes sense. I have to agree that even makes sense as even as you can, at least across the four categories, plus a couple of strikes on the other end.
Remember that you can use five categories using Tabram because conflicts are dealt with separately. So you don't actually need to use fives as conflicts.
But I mean, going into, we never used a four that I remember. So we did a few, in the whole course of the Bronx, what did we do? Maybe two or three threes and everything else.
That was usually one person on a panel.
Yeah. And so we hardly ever got into and in the prelims.
Right. But if you evened out requirements, one if you we're might lucky. Get into it.
I'm not sure that I necessarily agree that you need to even out requirements. I mean, it seems like you would want fewest numbers of ones if you wanted people to get their true ones. And obviously people can rank more people as one. I mean, there are I think at Bronx, for example, we did rank, or no, maybe it was St. Mark's, one of the two that I filled out last week. We did rank way more ones than necessary because I felt like there was a huge drop off between our last one and what would have to be a two. And so,
yeah, I mean, the default is as many ones as you want. Sure.
Right. But from the perspective of, you know, from the perspective of the tournament, if they, you know, if they want to say that we have, you know, not as many, if they wanted it to be real, I mean, I think if you wanted it to be real, you wouldn't require any numbers of ones and people would just say, oh, these are all my twos or you know, something along the line where you would have a very minimal requirement for any of them. And then they just would have to fill it out, which would mean that they would risk, you know, you can only game it so much. The other thing I was thinking about too, about tournaments that might be tighter on judge pools, but have a high concentration or like a high number of kids from each school, which can muck things up a little bit is, just say that, you know, for you get judge preferences for your first four entries, and then anything you go beyond that, you can have strikes. But, you know, we're not going to have preferences for those individuals, especially if it's allowing people in on favor, or, you know, be like you've gone over the limit that the tournament allows, but the tournament's allowing you to bring extra people. It seems like that would be one way to make sure at least the top couple of kids from every school weren't having their judges sort of eaten up by the seventh or eighth debaters from another school. It seems like it would be a fair
it's an interesting
compromise.
Way of thinking about that.
Because I think that, you know, I think of my own school for, you know, Harvard West. Like whenever we go to a tournament, we almost always bring people who are going to be highly preferred to the judging, but they can't judge my own kids. So on one hand, it doesn't help the tournament from that perspective. It helps the tournament because they can be placed in other spots. But from covering our spots, it doesn't necessarily help. But then, at the same time, it makes our strike sheet harder to do sometimes too, because five of the 20 available judges are people we would normally give A's to if they weren't working for us. Then,
unlike the case disclosure, which we were saying before, sort of gone into, and this I think is going to be at least around here because for no other reason I'm doing it and I'm running all these tournaments. So, you know, you start putting it in and you want to make it. I mean, my guiding principle ultimately being it's called mutual judge preference. So I want to, whatever system leads to the most mutual judge preferences, you know, and it's, and I'm not sure yet, I mean, where that is, but I think equal numbers, I mean, what we're saying tonight, mostly like equal numbers are a good way to start until you learn something simple. Different. I mean, it worked at the Bronx. I mean, yeah, but well, again, it was the big pool. So
the other potential system too is that college policy uses ordinal rankings,
right?
And you just rank them all in order, and they strive for as much mutuality as you can. So,
I may get to experience that this weekend because I'm going to be tabbing the Fullerton tournament. So I'm going to be trying out Brush East program and. I don't know if they're going to use ordinal rankings or not. At least in policy they will. So what they do is they say, you know, that the lowest we'll ever go is this, and the most difference there will ever be is, you know, 10. You know, they'll say the lowest you'll ever get is a 30, and the most you'll ever be between you and your opponent is going to be 10 points between them, or 10 spots between them. So
is this this isn't built into TRPC, is it?
No. This is actually a program that he does that just runs. I mean, it runs right. I don't know exactly how
it runs on his website, right?
Yeah, but I mean, you still have to run it. It's not browser based. Like I still have to use a PC. But from what I understand, though, the judges can just enter results right from their computers, and it just populates the. It just populates it all right. You know, on the, right away. So I think that'll be pretty cool to see. I would think that it wouldn't be tough to you know, use that also for, I guess the big thing that he was having problems with was that last year when it was done, it wasn't able to flight rounds, but this year it's going to have to be able to. And then, the other nice thing, I guess, is that, the tabbing, I think that the tabbing can just sort of be done, you know, you press a button and it does all those, the placements a little bit better than TRPC does, because I think it looks for judge first as opposed to, you know, other issues like getting, I guess, it seems weird that TRPC, it seems like it does, it tries to couple the flights together first as opposed to looking to which
TRPC also looks for the hardest judges to place, which is why the lowest ranked judges always get double flights.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just, you know, the program saying, okay, we're going to try to place the hard judges first. So I'm giving two flights to people. I mean, it wasn't always true at Bronx. I mean, some people got two flights because we engineered that they got two. But people who got two because the computer gave them two were two people who were usually low on the preference scale.
Right.
And, yeah, so that's sort of problematic, I think, in its way, but it, you know, does keep all the crappy judges busy, you know, so I don't know, keeps them out of mischief, they don't come in and storm the whatever, you know, so it works out. But I mean, but one thing we were saying too, I mean, just using because of the way a TRPC takes in the data, I mean, just even if all you have is strikes, we use mutual judge preference and just set the maximum number of strikes, at least you can get the strikes in without having to enter them manually, because half the time I forget, and then the other half the time you get them wrong. I mean, you make mistakes, and it's nice to be able to bring them in automatically. There were a couple of things, and I think this is a problem of the people didn't do it correctly. Somebody who comes in, well, I don't have my strikes. And like two out of the three people have their strikes on the team. And then it turns out if you talk to them long enough, they expected somebody else on their team to have done it for them or something like that. They really hadn't sat there themselves and done these. And then, well, they whine a little bit and then they go away. But it takes them a while. I love this thing. You know, last five rounds, I haven't gotten, I've gotten my judges I struck. And it's like, well, you know, what took you so long, you know, to come around? It's never like I just got a judge I struck. I mean, well, occasionally it is. But five rounds. So that sort of goes hand in hand with not having done it yourself or whatever. You know, my other guy, no, I don't think so. Yeah, so that happened a bit. Because for a while, when it first happens, you think, well, maybe there's a mistake. Maybe there's a programming flaw. That's easy to understand that it could happen. But I don't think it is. I absolutely don't think it is. So,
I agree.
The other thing we had looked at, I haven't looked at it since. I haven't looked at it later. I couldn't do it instead of sitting here staring off into space. I'm going to do this here. But one of the things we had done early on was looking at bias, AFNEG bias, and I didn't look after the beginning. In the very beginning of the tournament, if I remember correctly, it was something like 40% AF, which was...
Yeah.
That's usually in the beginning of the tournament, it's sort of random, but maybe because it's a tough tournament, not so true at that, but I haven't looked... We never looked at it after that, and I was saying before that in the semi-round, before we started recording, in the semi-round, both the AFs won, so...
Right.
You know. But whatever. So I'll see if I can take a look at this. You guys, you know, smoke them if you got them. That's it. You could just hear that window sound coming. I love when the window sound comes up on my.
It's okay. I'm falling deeper and deeper into BBS, the Big Bronx Sickness, which comes after every tournament.
Okay.
Which is not because anything particular Bronx Science is making me ill. It's just that when you cram that many children into a contained space, no doubt you can have the outbreak of whatever. So.
You're not one of the tournaments I get sick at. I don't know.
No, I always get sick at the Kaiser, with all due respect to my friends in Monticello.
Well, the Kaiser is pretty notorious. The Kaiser flu is pretty... I was a Villiger flu man myself, you know, so that's why I stopped going.
What was Beats about to say? Beats is going to say something.
Oh, I was going to say something about side bias, I guess.
Say so.
Well, I was just going to say that I don't... You know, having... Just having talked to... a lot of people about it and trying to understand it just seems like there's nothing that can really be done from a wording mm-hmm. standpoint as long as the writers continue to give the negatives the permissibility argument, I think the negatives are just going to continue to crush because they will always get not always or not necessarily or that's a good thing to do but you don't have to, and as long as they get those arguments there's not a whole lot affirmatives can do. And you know, I now see a bunch of, if you read the 3NR blog, Scott makes a good point about this, how now you just got a bunch of affirmatives that spend the first 45 seconds to a minute having preemptive defensive arguments just trying to get out of it, and it's just not gonna it doesn't really help. I mean, I told my kids we're no longer gonna do those preemptive arguments. They're silly and wasting time. As long as the negatives get to aren't required to have any good reason to vote for them outside of don't vote affirmative because they haven't done enough, you know, then I really feel like we're never gonna get over this side bias thing, because it's just because I think judges like to vote that way, and as long as they see the resolution as a statement of truth as opposed to something that's like needs to be debated back and forth and weighed against each other, it just doesn't really matter too much about the whatever can be done by the affirmative to fix whatever they're trying to do.
In this tournament, it was, I mean, well, the advice I would give any debater in the future is always go AF in a semifinal round, because that was 100% affirmative. But anyhow, overall, it was 41% affirmative, both prelims and elims, 33% affirmative wins in the triple octo round, 34% in the sixth round. You know, you get that occasionally, but oh my God, octafinals, 25%. Holy cannoli. Octafinals go neg. That would be my advice anyway.
That's a much larger sample size, so it's more like
that's a big sample, yeah. And everybody's, I mean, one of the things I think we've said in the past, when everybody's roughly equivalent, the negative tends to win, you know, whereas when people are sort of random, that's why I would expect affirmative wins in round two, where it's random, it's 54% affirmative. That's the only round where affirmative comes up. But, you know, you can have anybody debating anybody there. You can have a very good person on the affirmative and a very weak person on the negative just because of the random draw. As people start getting bracketed, then you start seeing that diminishing returns on going affirmative. Right. Although, well... 42% is in round 7 after 34% in round 6. You know. But I mean, the numbers are there.
That's still 58% the other way.
Yeah. I mean, the numbers are very persuasive. You know, it's not a flip of the coin here. It's a real trend, and overall, you know, you have two chances out of 5 of winning on the affirmative. it's as simple as that. I mean, all other things being equal, and as the tournament progresses, all other things are equal. 2 out of 5 is Not that great. 3 out of 5 is a lot bigger. There's a lot bigger odds.
Yep.
So I put my money on the 3 out of 5. So
it just doesn't. How about in round 7?
Round 7 was 42% affirmative. Hmm. Yeah, so that was pretty much on average. So that was like very close to the average.
It would be interesting to see of the kids that were eligible to break based on that round 7 win how it went. Because I know on my team the two kids that got to negate one and the two that had to affirm lost in that round.
And that's going to be the odds are going to be saying that that'll happen. All and everything else being equal, and if they had been on the other side, there's like a 20% chance that they would have in fact won. Did somebody just go away or something?
No.
I sent a private message.
That's not a private message. I mean, it goes beep beep. Bloop, bloop. And then I read it, and it says you got the Bronx. You got bronchitis.
I may have to depart early from this podcast. Not to be rude, I've never done such a thing before.
Nobody else can hear the beep beep, you know, Jim.
They can't.
Thanks, Jim.
Yeah. Well, so you just totally blew the secret.
How come you guys couldn't hear the beep beep?
Your audio hijack is just recording Skype, so it's whatever Skype can hear.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what makes it a private message.
Oh, because I tried to play music once and it didn't do the music, and I couldn't, and that was very irritating to me because I thought I had a nice background. I mean, I was playing the Circle of Life while we were talking about animal rights.
For the sake of full disclosure for the audience, I took a poorly timed NyQuil, and I'm starting to feel that it's going to be catching up with me any moment in full. And for those who
so it's not like you're like going to, you're sitting there like, you know, with the
then just
you know,
go
gastrointestinal debate kind of thing going on, you know.
All right, okay, well, before I go, I do want
before
to say,
he goes, yes, before we leave, yes.
I don't mean to be rude. I am glad that we're doing these podcasts again because I do rather enjoy them. But I also wanted to say for the 5 people listening at home,
hi Abdul, yes,
really appreciated the hard work by my 3 fellow podcast recorders who did an incredibly, 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 incredibly amazing job this weekend, and. This is the first year. I mean, Menick at the beginning was making sort of a kind comment about
how. I'm sorry, I'll never do it again. What?
Yeah, that is young, but he was sort of talking about how it's just expected by him that my tournament's going to be very good, and I appreciate that. But I have to say that this is actually the first year where I felt like just everything ran itself to a degree. That was kind of like my dream from the beginning, and that's something that would be completely impossible without really, really talented TAB directors. And I sort of have an embarrassment of riches in that sense because I really feel like I just had an unbelievable TAB staff across the board. And so I want to say thank you. I really appreciate it. You guys worked really, really tirelessly and really hard, and it was noticed by many. And for those who didn't immediately know that they owed everything to the TAB rooms, I hope that they now know it.
Abdul knows it. He's the only one who listens.
Jen Baruti is listening.
Okay, well,
that's
true.
And so I should
true.
Also say thank you, of course, to the Bronx Science parents. Mm-hmm. This weekend was a good reinforcement of the idea that if you want to run a really, really good tournament, it's very important to have both the support of your parents and the support of your school. So,
yeah
to that.
I mean, you absolutely have to have parents, and I would go down, and they're so nice. You get some nice people, you know.
Thank you. They're
very comfortable being around them. I mean, that's part of the thing, too. A tournament ought to feel nice. Everybody ought to want you there. I've been to tournaments where you felt they didn't want you there. And this is certainly
and
not
that
kind of
tournament. And
you very
rapidly don't want to be there, too.
Yeah, so. Exactly. I mean, it is a two-way street. It is absolutely a two-way street. But, I mean, I've said this in a lot of things I've written over the thing. I mean, if you're running a tournament, you're managing. You can't do anything.
I agree.
You have to be a manager and have everybody else do stuff, and they come to you with problems, and you solve the problems.
You have to also not have a new job I'm creating next year will be, and I was joking around about this year, but now I must have a tournament ombudsman because the one problem I seem to have, and I would like to think it's the curse of being nice because I try to be a nice guy, is that I think everybody feels entitled to text me very ultimately unimportant questions to my cell phone while the tournament is happening.
We've talked about ombudsman in the past.
You have to have a help desk.
Well, that's what I mean. The
ombudsman is the person that...
Well, they're problem solver.
Yeah, they're the ones that they have to be the heavy when someone's like, I didn't pay my bill, what should I do? Or I didn't... They deal with disputes.
I think this
is
something we've talked about and we need to talk more about and get more. It's hard to find that many people to help you run a tournament, but it's a really important aspect.
I'm able to do that. I mean, there were 1,600 people in one form or another at this tournament.
You just need four people that really know everything, where everything is, know all the extra rooms that are being used, and they just need to sit there. Well, the biggest thing with kids is that they don't just get up and leave.
No,
like
I agree.
They have to just sit there, and they have to.
Well, the way that I pitch the term to the kids, I guess this is my last thought before I go into NyQuil Sleepland, is that I'm very fortunate in that I have a team where I feel my kids are very loyal to me, and I mean that. I know that sounds like a little corny, but the way I pitch this term to the kids in the beginning, and it's just come to be part of the culture of the team, is that I point out to them, I say, you know, I really give my life to this program. I put in my all for them every weekend. So this has to be the one weekend a year where they put in their all for me, right? And I found that my kids are willing to work very long hours as a result, I think, when it's pitched to them that way. And I feel like that would be true on any team where kids have respect for their coach, which is, you know, hopefully most teams. So I agree completely about that. I think that while there's a risk that people might leave, it's very important to have the help desk. And that's something that I know from this year. So with that having been said, not to be rude, but I am going to go to bed.
Well, we've actually sort of done, because we had started before, so put them all together, we put in about an hour of program.
Oh, that's right. Actually. I'm looking at this time and I'm thinking, how on earth are we still talking? I forgot about the earlier.
Yeah, no, that's true.
So
we did.
Oh, so now I don't feel bad at all. I just made a fool out of myself and talked about my NyQuil.
But go bloop, bloop again, and, you know, just to, anyhow. Okay.
That's going to be great because you can say, I just took some bloop bloop, and that's therefore I'm going to sleep now.
All right, good
night. That won't happen.
On that note. All right, well, anyhow, why don't we just all sign off then? It's good to do. We haven't done this. I like
do
doing this.
Again, and
I think that we need practice.
We do. This one sucked, but we'll be better next time. Abdul, we will be better next time. I promise you. All right, guys. I will see you all whenever.
Touch listens to us too. So, hi, Michael Morton. All right, have a good night.
Okay, good night, guys. Okay. Ooh, jeez.